Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Thursday, January the 22nd, 2026. 14 minutes past the hour here, WGH Talk Radio time. Not a bad morning temperature-wise, but it looks as if it's going to get very cold in the next couple days here in the Marion area, as well as apparently some snow headed our way as we head into the weekend. So the weather, which is always an interesting topic amongst people, continues to be an interesting topic as we had very chilly, cold, frigid weather at the beginning of the week. And as we head into the weekend here, it looks like the temperatures might even be worse than they were at the beginning of the week, and then the snow coming as we head into the weekend. So, as I said, people love to talk about the weather, and it continues to be a topic. Now, I do always want to remind people, you can go to the website, WWGH1071.com, anytime, listen to archive programs on the website, or stream this station live anywhere in the world, or you can download the absolutely free TuneIn app on any mobile device, smart television, smartphone, whatever it is, Alexa, Google Dot, and say, listen to WGH Talk, and you can have us 8:15 until 10 a.m. each and every morning. And we certainly appreciate everybody who listens to this station on a regular basis. It's always important to have people out there listening and paying attention to what's going on in the world, because without that, what do you really have if you don't have the listeners out there paying attention? And as I've said, it's a busy news morning here in Marion, as it seems to be as of late. You know, anytime you're dealing with a city's finances, it's going to be of interest to the people who live and do business in that city. And there are a lot of people who do business in the Marion area who are not necessarily living in the Marion area. So here we go on down the line this morning on WGH Talk. Now, as we go on down the line this morning, we are so glad to be joined by our guest this hour, somebody I have wanted to talk to for quite a while now. He has been a guest on this program before, very graciously, but with everything going on nationally, with our gubernatorial race statewide kicking into high gear, with the choosing of the lieutenant governor candidates on the Republican and Democratic side just a couple weeks ago, nobody better to welcome to this program than the 64th governor of the great state of Ohio, Governor Dick Celeste. Governor, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm well. Thank you for asking.
Hey, good to speak with you. Always great to have you on the program. And boy, oh boy, first thing I want to ask you, with everything going on in the world, before we get into the particulars and going on in the state of Ohio, what do you make of the news cycle that we're in? From somebody, you've been in the news, but well, you've been a part of the news for a long time, being a former governor. What do you make of just this cycle we're in that's continuous every day?
Well, I think it's a challenge. For many of us, we'd like a moment to slow down and take stock of things. And it seems that with social media, things get not only broadcast but rebroadcast and pushed, and to have time to call the children and have a conversation or to talk to your neighbor or to sit down and enjoy a cup of coffee. It's difficult. I mean, I know a lot of people who are trying to wean themselves from screen time. And I think part of that is the fact that you know, we're in a 24/7 news cycle, and it's probably reinforced by the fact that we've got a president who spends 3 or 4 hours in the middle of the night sending out these texts, posting, and people feel obliged to pick up on that. I think if we, let's put a hiatus on reporting for 6 hours, and then and then do it. It would be a whole lot easier. I want time, Scott, to enjoy my children and my grandchildren and my great grandchildren.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way you do. But here we are, January 22nd. A year and 2 days since President Trump was sworn in as President of the United States for the second time. What do you make overall of the first year of Donald Trump's second term in office?
Well, I think he has tried very hard to fulfill many of the promises that he made or that were made by others during the campaign. I mean, you know, when he said he hadn't read Project 2025, but certainly that was the blueprint for his initiatives when he took office, and he brought in people who were devoted to delivering on that agenda, and so. I think in some respects, we should not be surprised by what Donald Trump has done. And he, another aspect of this, I think he learned in the first term that if he wanted to get done what he wanted to do, not what those around him recommended, but what he wanted to do, then he needed people who were loyal to him rather than to the notion of governing. They wanted him to help him do what he wanted to do. And so he surrounded himself by a very different team. And instead of having people who would slow him down or offer alternatives, he's got a team that is devoted to delivering what he wants to do, or even more than what he wants to do, because I think that some of what we've seen from Stephen Miller and others is perhaps their own agenda, which is an exaggerated agenda of the president.
Governor Celeste, what do you make of President Trump's comments recently about Greenland and wanting to take it over? What happened in Venezuela? I don't think we're still sure who's running that country. The Nobel Peace Prize being given to him, not as an award, but just the award itself being given to him, not the honor that goes with it. His comments about Norway in regard to that. What do you make of this whole cycle, Greenland, Venezuela, Nobel Peace Prize?
Well, what we've learned is that the president really is focused on himself. He wants adulation, and there is a group of people who are prepared to give that to him, and I think that reinforces his frame of mind. Look, the man began as a real estate guy. I grew up in real estate with my father, and my father would go around constantly looking at parcels of land. 99% of the time, it was just looking. Very rarely did a project development. But Donald Trump is my father on stage. He thinks first and foremost about land and putting an imprint on it. And I think, you know, you look at a map and Greenland looks big and inviting, and who's running it anyhow. And so somehow or another, he's become obsessed about this. Is it a good idea? No. it puts us at odds with our European allies, those who come to our aid after we were attacked in 9/11. It is a distraction from the serious work that needs to be done here at home to address the problems of the economy and the challenges that are looming with the impact of AI down the line. And so I'm not happy with what he's doing. I think it's wrong. I think it's a misdirected effort, and we pay a price for it. We as a nation are paying a price for it. We have lost the confidence of our closest ally, that is Canada. And we have a 1,300-mile border with Canada, which has never had to be militarized or protected. And we now have the Canadians say they cannot trust us. And that, from their standpoint, I think that's probably an accurate description, because we have a president who does what he's interested in, not necessarily what others have counseled him to do or have said, let's join hands and address an issue. So I think the Nobel Prize, I mean, come on. I mean, I think that's... he doesn't have a Nobel Prize, and I think the notion that this young woman who's led the opposition in Venezuela has given him the medal, which goes with the prize, not the money, and certainly not the prize itself, because only the prize can only be awarded by the Nobel Foundation organizers, and they made a decision to give the prize to her. So, you know, it is a distraction from serious work that needs to be done here at home. And Scott, the last thing I'd like to say about the president, because I really try not to spend most of my time thinking about him, but what he has done with the Department of Homeland Security and ICE and the Border Patrol, in particular right now in Minnesota and Minneapolis and St. Paul, is a terrible, terrible scarring of our own body politic. This is using agents, they call them agents of the United States government. They behave like thugs. They behave like gangsters in the way in which they're treating people. And I think that's the kind of thing that we should be concerned about. And that's what he should be concerned about. So,
well, I think this is the last bit I want to talk about the national politics before we move to what's going on here in the state. But everything that is going on in Minnesota and the shooting and the things we have seen coming out of there, just as a human being and a former governor, how does that strike you? Some people call it murder. How do you refer to it?
Well, from what I saw, in the various videos of the shooting of Rene Good, who incidentally is from Colorado Springs, where I'm currently living, I would consider it unprovoked assault by an officer, and I think it deserves to be treated as a potential crime and investigated by the local authorities as well as the federal government, and a fair conclusion reached. I think what's going on in the tear gassing, in the breaking of cars, using their vehicles to jam other, you know, ordinary citizens who are driving in their cars, forcing the people of Minnesota, anyone who's newly in this country legally and is an American citizen, to have to carry papers. That is the makings of a totalitarian society, and it is un-American in my view. I've been sitting, Scott, you know, what do you do when you're 88 years old? I've spent a lot of time looking at my ancestry. My father was born in Italy. He was 9 months old when his mother, who was only 19, brought him to the United States. to reunite with her husband, who'd come to work in steel mills in Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh. And turns out, you know, my father was an orphan. I don't know how he got papers. But in 1916, he arrived in 1906. In 1916, he was naturalized. His name had been Serafino, a name given to him. It means angel in Italian. It was given to him because he was left on a doorstep. He came to the United States. 10 years later, he was working, raising his wife and son, and he became an American citizen. And he proudly kept his naturalization papers. So did my father, because my father was a naturalized citizen born in Italy. The idea that my father would have to carry those papers with him when he practiced law in Cleveland, or when he served as mayor of Lakewood, or when he was the head of the church council in Cleveland, the idea that he would have to carry those to prove to someone that he was an American is just astonishing. And the fact that we're doing it to people who are working hard and who came to this country because they had a dream, it is terrible. When I think about the speech that Ronald Reagan gave, one of the greatest speeches of his life, about what it means to be an American, and how profoundly we are, this administration is trampling on that notion with armed goons. It appalls me, and so I resist spending time thinking about it. Frankly, I hope that this doesn't happen close to me in Colorado. But if it does, I probably will be out there protesting.
Well, that's very interesting. And just one follow up here, and then I definitely want to get to our governor's race and other things going on in Ohio. There has been talk recently, serious talk in the media and in other places, that maybe somebody should start looking at the 25th Amendment here, that maybe President Trump isn't fit for this job mentally anymore. Do you think that that's those conversations should be going on?
I'm not sure that the 25th Amendment is the right avenue. It seems to me, and the thing that really bothers me, and I guess this is Ohio, there are two senators in Ohio, you know, Bernie Moreno and John Husted, who should stand up and say this is wrong. Bernie Moreno is a naturalized American, as I understand it. I may be wrong about that, but certainly his family came to this country, like my family, and all of us. You know, I live out where there are Native Americans, and they remind us regularly that this was their land before it became our land. And so I think the way to do it is to stand up in the Senate and say, we're not going to fund this kind of thing. To say we're going to hold hearings on the conduct of our immigration. It's one thing to enforce the immigration law. That can be done. And I think, you know, looking for criminals is one thing. But terrorizing folks in the parking lots of Home Depot or the local grocery store or schools or churches, that's another. And that's just plain wrong. And so I think our system of government was designed so that an executive could not conduct himself in this way or herself in this way without answering to a Congress. And what astonishes me, and probably what saddens me, as much as the misdirected leadership that I think we see in the White House, is the absolute silence of virtually all members of the Republican Party in the House and Senate. I mean, a Tom Tillis or a Tom Massey are the rare individuals who are willing to speak up. Marjorie Taylor Greene was willing to speak up. But we need more voices like that. And then that is the check to balance what's going on.
Well, and let's turn to Ohio here. You mentioned our senator, John Husted. He will be up for election this year against Sherrod Brown, the Democrat running against him. And very interestingly enough, today is the one-year anniversary of Governor DeWine appointing Senator Husted to fill the term of J.D. Vance. What have you made of the 1 year of John Husted as senator? And as we look ahead, how do you think this might turn out this year against Sherrod Brown, his election campaign?
Well, I want to be honest here, Scott. I don't follow the daily votes and actions of the Ohio senators these days. But I do feel like I haven't seen from any of the Republicans, and Husted certainly is one of them, any actions that would, I think, put us back on track as a country. I haven't seen a protest about the Greenland stuff. In other words, I just feel like what he has done has been an enabler for whatever the president wants to do, whether that's in the interest of the state of Ohio or not. I think that one of the big challenges I feel that has arisen at this moment in our country is the incredible wealth that is in the hands of, several hundred families, less than 1% of this country, and how that wealth is being deployed in politics, and the degree to which that, I think, has forced many people to be silent. And one of the things about Sherrod Brown, and I think at least some of the folks in the Democratic Party, is that they are not going to be, they're not going to be intimidated by the threat of large sums, and we're talking about tens of millions of dollars of dark money that is coming into campaigns against them. And I think that's the kind of support that Husted as a Republican candidate has sought and accepted, and it means he's unwilling to address what the impact is of a capitalist system that has gotten out of control. I mean, it's very interesting to see folks who are going back to read Adam Smith and the work that he did describing the invisible hand that was the good part of capitalism, and to see how now there is a visible hand that is a fistful of dollars that is dominating what's happening in our economy. We see the influence of a half dozen tech leaders to impact policy around artificial intelligence. We see the impact of folks who can buy and organize media conglomerates and what they've done, how they've turned CBS from a remarkably, well, it was really the in many respects, when Walter Cronkite was there, it was the conscience of the country, and a voice that everyone listened to, into now an apologist in some ways for the administration. So, I think that the lines between the choice between a Sherrod Brown and a John Husted are very clear. And my sense is that people who hoped that Trump, because he was a business person, they didn't hold his business failures against him, and you can't, because most business people have one or two failures in their experience. But they thought he would address the economy, and he hasn't. He hasn't dealt with affordable housing. He hasn't dealt with, in fact, the impact of his tariffs have been just the opposite when it comes to prices in the grocery store. Anyone who's buying coffee today understands that. So I can't give you an A, B, C, D on my report card on John Hughes. That I think I see him as part of what's wrong right now with our Congress, and I think that we need Sherrod's voice back there.
Want to turn to the gubernatorial race, because you made headlines late last year in our Ohio gubernatorial race when you were early, I believe in September, really the first major endorsement that Dr. Amy Acton got as the Democratic candidate for governor coming up later this year. And I remember we were doing a show at the time with Mary Ellen Withrow, who you have certainly had a relationship with over the years professionally when she was the treasurer of Ohio and treasurer of the United States. She was kind of taken back that you had endorsed Dr. Acton prior to Tim Ryan announcing if he was going to get in the race or not. Why did you endorse her so early, and what strikes you about Amy Acton?
Well, there are several things. First, she asked me, and I think this is really important for a candidate who wants support to ask for it. Secondly, I had a chance to get to know Dr. Acton and work with her when Governor DeWine asked me to join Bob Taft in a small group advising him about how to address that terrible COVID pandemic that hit Ohio and the rest of the country. And in the course of about a year, it was actually during the time that she was public health director of Ohio, I was on the phone with her on a regular basis during a really tough time. And I watched her give candid advice to the governor, he didn't always take, which is fair enough. I watched the two of them work together and as a team. He made the tough decisions, but she offered, I thought, really sound advice, and she was willing to articulate hard choices in a way that I think clarified the decisions that the governor could then make. And I watched her communicate with the people of Ohio honestly and with real feeling for them, because she's an authentic human being. And part of what I felt in endorsing her was that that every state needs, and Ohio's got a great opportunity to have someone who's not a politician, who hasn't spent their time in politics, but comes at public service as an authentic human being who's going to be who they are honestly with people. And I think that, you know, I respect Tim Ryan, and I respect a variety of people who could have run for governor in Ohio, but I just felt early on that Amy Acton would be a positive leader for the state of Ohio in a new direction, and at a time when, frankly, there's a cloud of special interest and corruption that hangs around the State House gang as a result of gerrymandering, feeling insulated from the public in a way that is incredibly damaging to people's confidence in government. And when the people of Ohio pass an anti-gerrymandering amendment twice, and both times it gets chewed up by a supermajority in the State House who turn it into their into something that can protect their own interests, and who, when the state Supreme Court calls them out on it, not once or twice, but three times, they then turn the Supreme Court of the state into a political tool by putting party labels on the Supreme Court justices. I mean, Scott, it should make every Ohioan angry and upset. And I think Amy understands that the State House is out of touch with where Ohioans are and what they need. And she brings a devotion to listening to what people are feeling and then doing what she can to help address that in a direct way. And it's such an incredible contrast between her and this billionaire governor candidate who, you know, he wanted to be president before he wanted to be governor. He wanted to be part of DOJ before he wanted to be governor. Now he wants to be governor. Scott, do you know what $1 billion really is?
What's that?
Well, suppose you made $5,000 a day every day of the year. How many years would it take for you to have $1 billion?
I'm guessing quite a few.
Well, if I said 400 years, would you think that's about right?
I would say so.
If I said 500 years, would you say that's right?
Maybe in the neighborhood.
It's over 500 years. It's $5,000 a day. Again, I don't think most people have any idea when they hear a billionaire what that means. It means that you don't have to do anything. And if you put your money in a treasury bond and you're earning 4%, you're getting $20 million a year. I mean, you can't be in touch with the challenges an ordinary person is wrestling with right now. Two jobs in order to be able to pay the mortgage and your health premiums. Moving in with your parents because you can't find a job coming out of college. All of the kinds of challenges that are there for most people across the country, and certainly most people in Ohio, and particularly, you know, ironically, particularly in those parts of Ohio that voted for Donald Trump. And those are the people that Amy Atkin understands and the people she's going to reach.
Well, and Governor Celeste, since you had made your endorsement back in September, we now know who the lieutenant gubernatorial candidates will be. Vivek Ramaswamy chose State Senate President Rob McCauley, and Dr. Acton chose former head of the Democratic Party here in Ohio, David Pepper. What do you make of those choices?
Well, I would say that the least important thing about David Pepper was that he was the state Democratic chairman. I prefer the fact that he was a member of city council and then a county commissioner in Cincinnati, and he understands local government, and he understands where government and people meet right up close and personal. He also has spent a lot of time looking at how state government operates for better and for worse across the country, and has written forcefully about the virtues of state government as a place where you can make a difference. I think that the choice of Ramaswamy picking a leader in the legislature doesn't surprise me. He doesn't know anything. Ramaswamy doesn't know anything about government, but it's also like a seal of approval for what's been going on in the legislature, and that's where we need change. I mean, in fact, I've been spending my time, Scott, the last few weeks trying to make sure that there are at least two candidates in every state house district across Ohio, because I think that no one should get a free ride to Columbus, and no one should feel that they're entitled to a seat in the state legislature. They should have to earn it. And I think you know, if people want more of the same, that's the formula that they're really getting from the choice that Ramaswamy's made. I mean, we need to change that, and I do think that the real change, and the change that's going to be beneficial for the people, is clear in the Acton Pepper, the Dr. Pepper ticket.
There you go. That's a good way to label it. I want to turn to Governor DeWine here for a second. You mentioned that obviously Dr. Acton worked with Governor DeWine during the COVID crisis, and a lot of people were surprised in December when Governor DeWine was giving an interview because the Ramaswamy campaign has been hitting Dr. Acton pretty hard about how she handled COVID. And Governor DeWine said, this is a quote, "The decisions that were made during COVID, they were my decisions, so no one should blame someone else if they don't like it. The buck stops with me." Defending Dr. Acton at that time, were you surprised at that from Governor DeWine?
No, I wasn't. I mean, he was describing exactly what the role of governor is, how he conducted himself. He was getting advice from Dr. Acton. He took it most of the time. I'm sure there were a couple of times when he didn't take it. And then they stood side by side, and she was frequently the communicator. She was the person think of all the people across the state of Ohio who became kind of Dr. Acton fans. Their kids put on white coats and tried to pretend that they were, I'm Dr. Amy Acton, right? And it was because they saw her communicate in a way that gave them confidence that they'd get through this. But I think he was defending Amy Acton. He was describing what he did in his role as governor. He made those decisions, and he stood by them. And I respect him for it. I don't doesn't mean he endorses Amy Acton for governor. He's one of the leaders of the Republican Party in Ohio. But I respect him for saying what he said, and I think people should not be surprised by that.
Well, and interestingly enough, in that interview in December, he said he would endorse the Republican, but he was not ready to endorse Ramaswamy at that point, that they still needed to talk, they needed to get to know each other. Then the same day that Dr. Acton and Ramaswamy chose their lieutenant governor candidates, Mike DeWine issued a statement. This is what he said. He said, "With the election year upon us, I am joining Republicans across Ohio in supporting our dynamic ticket for governor led by Vivek Ramaswamy. Ohio is winning new business project from the coast, and Vivek will keep the momentum going. Vivek Ramaswamy knows that Ohio is the best state to build a business, raise a family, and pursue your vision of the American dream." Now, when we had Governor Strickland on last week, he said he thought that was kind of a half-hearted endorsement from Governor DeWine, that he had to do it because he's the Republican, but his heart wasn't in it, more or less. How do you feel about Governor DeWine's endorsement on the day of the pick? The day of the picks.
Come on, Scott. You know, the governor spoke for himself. He's a grown up. He's been in office and in public life long enough to say what he believes. I think he believes that Ramaswamy will be a very good governor. He may also feel that Amy Acton would do a good job, but he's got to make a choice, and he's going to stand by it. I'm not surprised that he endorsed Ramaswamy, but I think that the time has come for a change in Columbus, and I don't think the people of Ohio are going to respond favorably in the end to very smart, articulate. Very articulate, very smart guy. Look, the governor said he's going to bring businesses to Ohio. Ramaswamy moved his business from Columbus to Texas, and you know, yeah, he probably has an explanation for that, but Earl Shoemaker used to tell a story. He would go home every night. You remember my lieutenant governor, but for 32 years he was a state legislator from Bourneville, Ohio. And Merle told a story about how when he was a freshman legislator and very earnest, he was going home every night, and his colleagues decided they thought that was a little distressing for them because they liked to stay in Columbus. And so they made him stay late because he had a bill he wanted to address at a committee hearing in Columbus. And so he got back to Bourneville very late, and his wife Dorothy was standing in the door, and she said, "Now, Merle, I want an explanation, and I want an explanation." And Merle said, "Well, I can give you an explanation, Dorothy, or I can give you an excuse, but I can't give you both." And I think we can give you, I think the governor has an explanation or an excuse, but he can't give us both. He's got to make an endorsement.
Governor Celeste, we are into the last year of Governor Mike DeWine, and just as a former governor and somebody who has pitched in with Mike DeWine, as you said, during COVID and helped out, how do you think history is going to look at the gubernatorialship of Mike DeWine?
Well, my sense is that, he's had a distinguished career in public service, in the state legislature, as a congressman, as a senator, as an attorney general, and as a governor, and he'll be in the history books. And I think he'll be in the history books for good reason. If I could help him do one last thing in this final year of his, I would say it would thrill me if he were to commute all of the death row inmates to life in prison, because I think the death sentence is an expensive anachronism. It doesn't bring back the victim of sometimes terrible, terrible crimes, but more often than we'd like to think, the death sentence was wrongly delivered. And if one looks at the people on death row, you will find that the large majority of them are individuals who suffered abuse as kids, who failed to graduate from high school, who fell into an addiction, one addiction or another. And I think, in my own experience, life without parole would be a terrible, terrible penalty for them to pay, and frankly, a cheaper one for the state of Ohio, and the right one. And I know in his heart, he opposes the death penalty, and I think he has an opportunity if he chooses to do it. I would strongly support him in that decision.
Governor Celeste, before we run out of time, I wanted to ask you this question, because this has been another big story in Ohio, is that billionaire Les Wexner has now been subpoenaed by the House Oversight Committee to testify in the Jeffrey Epstein incidents that have went on in this country. Also, we now know he's been subpoenaed. He is able to be subpoenaed by the Ohio State University Victims of Sexual Abuse by Dr. Strauss. As a governor, did you ever have any run-ins with Les Wexner, and what do you make of this story?
Well, I certainly had a chance to get to know Les Wexner, and I found him to be an extraordinary business leader. He built the limited stores and Victoria's Secret from a single store that was his father's clothing store. And he was a remarkable leader whose success benefited Columbus and Central Ohio, and he was a very strong civic leader in Columbus. It's interesting, Scott, I don't want to take too long about this. I was governor for at least part of the time that Jeffrey Epstein was in Columbus. I never met the man, and I had no idea that he played the role that he played in Les Wexner's financial life. So I'm stunned by this. I wonder in my own mind. I wonder if Wexner was so focused on building this company and what it demanded of him that he did not pay attention to some of the things that were going on that perhaps should have come to his attention. Whether they did or not, I have no way of knowing. But I'm saddened that there is this shadow over someone who was a shining leader for the community in the time that I was governor. And, I think we're out of time. So, but anyway, those are my thoughts about it.
We on the clock, we actually got about 90 seconds left. What kind of man was he when you would meet him? What kind of guy was Les Wexner?
He was the most focused person I know on what he did. As he said, I asked him, why aren't you in Columbus? Everybody in the rag trade is in Columbus. I mean, why aren't you in New York? He said, because when I stay in Columbus, they underestimate me, and I can do what I do. And he was an incredible innovator for the fashion industry and remade it in many respects. Fast fashion was started in the limited store operations, and he could move goods from China to the United States in 24 hours when he had to. And he was stunning. He was stunning. So I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah. So surprising to you that this would all come out?
It is totally surprising to me. I hope that he can find a way to share what he knows in a way that would help lift the shadow off of him and his family. It's too bad that that's happening.
It certainly is. The 64th governor of the great state of Ohio, Governor Dick Celeste. Governor Celeste, it's always a pleasure when you come on, and I hope we can do it again sometime soon with the gubernatorial election upon us this year.
Well, I'm off to India. When I get back, we'll do it again, Scott.
Thank you, Governor. Safe travels.
Take care. Yep, bye.
Bye-bye. Governor Dick Celeste. All right. Hey, two governors in 2 weeks. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Those things are no big deal, but taken together...